Today's shiur, Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Mem Aleph. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. In our previous shiur, we were at the bottom of Daf Mem Omid Beis, at which point a series of sources began. The series was indicated by the triangle geometric form, which, as you are already familiar by having learned the system, geometric forms represent a series of whatever. In this case, we were featuring sources for the need for the warning issued by witnesses to the defendant before the commission of a sin, of a crime. Without the warning, there will be no possibility of the court being able to act in meting out the punishment. The first source dealt with, from where do I know that there is a need for hasra, for warning, in order to give the malchus, the lashing punishment? And we saw Ula present the source from immorality conducted or practiced with one's sister. We continue with the list of sources dealing with the topic of from where do I know that there is a need for a warning. Debei Chizkiah, the top line here on Mem Aleph Omed Aleph, Debei Chizkiah Tana, the Yeshiva of Chizkiah teaches, V'chi Yozid Ish Al Re'ehu Lahor Goy Be'armo. The expression V'chi Yozid tells me he's premeditated. When a man acts in a premeditated fashion in order to kill his friend, this is a murder case, and we learn from here, Shehisrubo, that the fellow, the defendant, was warned, Vadayin Hu Mezid, and he's still acting in a premeditated fashion with intent. Murder with intent. And we've noted in the write-in here that this is a penalty punishable by the sword. In other words, the defendant, when found guilty, is subject to the death penalty at the sword. The Rashi points out at the top, V'chi Yozid, Minoya Dinan, Elo, how do we know that he is murdering with intent? Elo Shehisrubo, it must be that he was warned, the Adayin who makes it, and he still is continuing, even after the warning, he's continuing with the action, namely he's continuing with intent. Continuing in the Gemara, Debei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, they teach the following, Ha Moitzim Oisoi Mekoshesh Eitzim. The topic here is a topic of a Shabbos violation, and Shabbos violation is guilty of a skilo punishment. And the term mekoshesh eitzim, Rashi points out, it doesn't say in the past tense kishesh, but rather it says mekoshesh in the present. This indicates to us that he has been warned and he is still proceeding to violate this particular act of Shabbos violation called Mekoshish Eitzim, and the Gemara points out, Shehisrubo, he was warned, Va'adayin hu Mekoshish, and he's still intent on doing this action of Mekoshish. So we see by the term Mekoshish that we're dealing with an individual that was served notice that what he's doing is a Shabbos violation, and he nevertheless continues doing it. Debei Rebbe Tana. This is a source dealing with Naro Hamurasa. This is an act of immorality that is committed by some outside man having relations with a woman who has already been, she's become an Arusa to her husband. She's been offered marriage by her husband. She's been offered kedushin, harayat mekudeshesli, and she accepted. And now some outsider comes and conducts an act of immorality with her. The pasuk says, al davar asher ina. The word davar is taken to mean speech. Al iske dibur. Because of some speech. The speech being the warning that the victim, that the defendant received, and he nevertheless continued to have this immoral relationship with the Na'ar HaMorasa, and as a result of that, he will become guilty of a stoning penalty. By the way, this Chiyuv Skila is similar to the Chiyuv Skila that we saw in the source just before by Shabbos. Utsricha. Gemara points out that I need to have each one of these parshios written and indicating that there is a need for a warning of the defendant before we can carry out the penalty, the punishment. Utsricha. Di'i kosav rachmona achoisoi. Had the Torah written the idea of needing a warning before we can punish the defendant, in the case of Achos, so Havamino, I might have thought, Chayve Malkois in, there's a need for the warning. Actually, the need for the warning is a leniency, namely, that without the warning, the defendant cannot be punished whatsoever. However, Chayve Misos, lo. Had I taught the case only by Achosa, which was associated with Malkos, I would not have known the need for a warning in the case of Chayve Mises, those types of punishment, offenses that are punishable by death, being that they are more severe. It could have been thought that we will be able to have testimony against the defendant and put him to death even without having received a warning beforehand because of the severity of this type of offense. Therefore, Kosav Rachmono ki Yazid. Therefore, it was necessary for the Torah to write the parsha of murder, where even in a serious offense like that, like murder, nevertheless, the defendant cannot be punished unless he received a warning. V'i Kosav Rachmono v'chi Yazid. Had the Torah written this idea in the case of a murderer, Havi Amino Hani Mili Basayef. I would have thought that this is the case, namely that there is a need for a warning in the case of an offense punishable by the sword. Dekil, which is relatively speaking light. Avoskila de Chamura, Emolo. But something like a Shabbos violation or the case of Na'am Urasa, which is more severe in nature, I might have thought that there is no need for the warning provided for the defendant beforehand. We can kill him anyway, even without having received a warning. Tzricha, therefore, it's necessary for the Torah to teach the in those cases as well, Shabbos and Amarasa, that there is a need for a warning. V'tarti b'niskol l'lamali, why do I need the Torah to repeat this idea twice in the case of those offenses punishable by stoning? It would have been sufficient, one might have thought, to teach it in one case of stoning, and I figure that all cases of stoning require warning. The Gemara answers, L'Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon, the extra source is L'Asuya Nisrafin, comes to include the case of those punishable by Sreifa, because according to Rabbi Shimon, as we saw in the previous Shiur, Rabbi Shimon holds that Sreifa is a more severe type of offense, and therefore I could not have learned this leniency of necessity of warning from more lenient topics. The Rabbanan, according to the Rabbanan, who already learned that the most serious offense in their opinion, namely Skila, has a need for a warning. So Sreifa would have certainly needed, because of its lesser nature, certainly we would have a provision for this leniency, namely warning, before being able to punish the defendant. Why does it write the extra parsha? Answer, Milsa ta'asya b'kal v'chomer, Torah v'kosav l'okra. At times, the Torah writes information that I could have come to have could have concluded on my own through Kal v'chomer logic. Question: V'lichtoiv Rachmona b'niskolin, let the Torah write that there's a need for hasra in the most severe of offenses, and even so, we provide for this leniency of hasra, v'leisu hanoch v'ligmeru minei, and let the others, namely Malkos and Saif, that the Torah writes, let the Torah not have written them, and let us derive the need for hasra from skila. The Gemara says, hocha nami, here too we will answer as we did above, milsa da'asya v'kam v'chomer torach v'kosav lokra, that the writing of these parshios of need for warning by Malkus and Saif is an outgrowth of the phenomenon of the Torah writing things at times that could have been derived through Kal v'chomer. Hitir atzmo l'misa, we ask the witnesses, as was featured in the previous daf, we saw that we ask the witnesses, did the defendant acknowledge the fact that he would be killed by the court if he commits this offense? Minolon, from where do we know that that's a necessary element before we can proceed? Omar Rava, Vitema Chizkia. Rava says, and another version is, Chizkia says, Omar Kro, the Pasuk says, Yumas Hames. And from that expression, the Hames says, you will kill the dead. That's the literal translation, but everyone knows you don't kill a dead person. So what does that mean? Ashiyatir atzmo lemisa, until he acknowledges the warning and allows himself to be killed. The Rashi, Hames, a few lines up from here, says, Mashma kvar humes kodem shabal abeisdin. It sounds like he's already dead before he comes to court. Shechiev atzmo misa b'fiv. And the idea being that he acknowledged that he would himself be killed, and he did that by his own admission. You can see that we have a slash mark in the marked Gemara. This indicates that the Gemara that appears after this is not connected in its logical flow from that which was mentioned before. In other words, we have a new idea. The topic heading that we've assigned to this is found under the Nosei heading in the outside margin, Dinoi Shel Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan's law, Ede Naro Hamurasa Shehuzmu Ein Neherogin. Witnesses that come to testify about the act of immorality that was committed by having relations with a Nara Hamurasa, and then those witnesses were found to be lying through the Hazoma process. Hazoma means that two other witnesses come in and say regarding these original witnesses, regarding them, say, how can you testify about the act of immorality when you were with us in another place at that time? Generally speaking, witnesses that are found to be zaymimim, they are punished with whatever punishment they were trying to mete out to the original defendant. In this case, we have an unusual situation, according to Rav Chanan, that Edei Nara Hamurasa that are found to be lying are not subject to be killed. And why is that? Mitoch shiyacholim loymar la'oisra albay labonu. Because they could have said that we weren't coming to see her killed anyway. Our intent in testifying about the act of immorality that she participated in was in order to prohibit her henceforth from being with her husband. The halacha says that a woman that's of a married woman that's engaged in immorality becomes prohibited from being with her husband henceforth and with the person that conducted the immorality with her as well. We refer to that as being she's ne'eseres laboyel v'labal, to the paramour and to the husband. So these witnesses that came to testify about this misbehavior of the na'amurasa with the paramour can say that their entire intent was to simply create a prohibition or forbid her from being with her husband henceforth. as a result of that, they were not coming to kill her. Therefore, when they're found to be lying, they too will not be killed. That's Rav Hanan's argument. The Gemara then will raise a question on this, that according to Rav Hanan, then how do you ever have a situation that the Torah accounts for? The Torah clearly says that Nara Hamu'urasa is killed. But according to what you're saying, according to what Rav Hanan is saying, it would come out that Nara Hamu'urasa would never be killed because of the possibility of this being called Eidus She'i'ato Yochol Lahazima. It's the entire witnessing process here is something that itself could not be subject to the process of Hazoma, which states, as we said before, the witnesses get what they were trying to give to the victim. But if the witnesses can always offer a way out of the victim not receiving what they were trying to give to the defendant, so if they can always work their way out of not giving to the defendant the death penalty, so there would never be the possibility of a death penalty for the defendant either. Let us now see this in the Gemara. Amar Rav Hanan, Eidei Nara Hamurasa Shehuzmu. The witnesses that come to testify about the married woman in the Erusin status, and they're found to be lying through Hazoma, that they, the second set of witnesses, came and said that the first set of witnesses were with them at that time that they're testifying, that at the time that they're testifying the event took place, but they were in another place. Ein neherogin. Even though they're exposed as zemimim, they do not get the death penalty. Mitoch shicholim lomar. Since they could have said, Lo'isra al Baila Banu, our intent in testify was simply to prohibit her to her husband and not to have her killed. Therefore, they, when exposed as Zemimim, are themselves not killed. The Gemara asks, but Veha Asruba, they warned her not to engage in the immorality. And warning is issued only if there is an intent to see the death penalty eventually carried out. So how can they say they did not have intention of killing her, of seeing her put to death? The Gemara says, Delo Asruba, she was not warned. Question, V'i lo Asruba hechi miktala. If there was no warning, then she would not be killed. And if she would not be killed, then it's obvious that they would not be killed. Because we need to have the kasher zomam aspect, as they schemed to do. But once you say that they did not scheme to kill her, then they would be obvious to us that they would not be killed. Hence, what do I need Rav Hanan's observation for? The Gemara answers in the following case: Beisha chavera v'aliba de Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. This Na'am Rasa is an isha chavera. She's a knowledgeable and educated woman that's familiar with Torah law. And as a result of her being familiar with Torah law, she could be subject to the death penalty. However, they, the witnesses, can say that they were coming to testify about the event only to forbid her on her husband. As a result of that, we have a chidush, a possible chiddush by Rav Hanan, that even though it's a case where the victim might have been subject to the death penalty, had they not been exposed as liars, they themselves will not be subject to that same penalty. What is the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda's point? The Sanya, and he's featured in this Tanaic source, as you can see, that which appears in a frame in our marking system, represent Tanaic sources. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Chover Ein Sorach Hasra. Now, a knowledgeable person, a person that we know to have been knowledgeable, does not require a warning, before he commits the offense. Lefi shelo nitno hasrela havchin bein shogeg lemezid, because the whole purpose of a warning is only to make a distinction between the unintentional and the intentional. But when someone is knowledgeable, we will then say that all of his intentions are done, all of his actions are done with knowledge, and hence done with intention. The Gemara asks, though, a question based on a technicality. V'kevun de'inhu lo miktali, since they are not going to be killed, as we said before, that we're talking about a case they don't give a hasra because they were dealing with an isha chavera, but there's a technical problem here, that since they are not going to be subject to the death penalty, ihi hechi miktala, how is it that she could be killed? Havyula edus shi ato yohola hazima. You have a situation of testimony concerning which we are not able to carry out the hazoma principle. The hazoma principle states that whatever they were trying to do to her, the witnesses themselves get when exposed as liars. But since here we have a discrepancy, we're claiming here that she would get the death penalty and they would not, we don't have the relationship between between defendant and witnesses. The chol edus shi'i ato yochol azima lo shmo edus. When the principle of kasher zomam cannot be applied, we don't have edus whatsoever. Rashi says, lo shmo edus, hoyol v'i efshel kayim boy v'dorashto v'chokarto v'dorshu hashoiftim v'ine eid sheker. Since this cannot be carried out, therefore we don't have edus whatsoever. We don't have what we would consider a legal unit of testimony. The pasuk, by the way, that Rashi quotes is noted on the side of the Gemara in our write-in. The pasuk there says, "V'dorshu hashreftim heitev, v'nei eid sheker ha'ed sheker ona b'yachiv." After the judges question the witnesses, and we then expose them as being false, "V'asisem loy kasher zomam lasos le'achiv ubi'ar tohara mikirbecha." And then we subject the lying witnesses, and they shall receive what they were trying to mete out to the defendant. The Gemara continues, Hachi nami ko'omar. In fact, this is what Rav Chanan said at the outset. Mitoich she'ein neherogin. From the fact that the witnesses themselves that were found to be lying through Azoma are not killed. And why is that? Shechulim lomar, they could say, Le'oisra abay labonu, we came simply to prohibit her on her husband. Afhi eino neheregis, so too she will not be killed, and this will include the Isha Chavera. And why will she not be killed? Tahavyola edus shi'i ato yochol hazima, because it's a unit of testimony that we cannot carry out the kasher zomam principle on. The question now arises, Elo b'isho chavera de kaimelon de mikdala, but we know that a knowledgeable woman is subject to death even without a warning. How does that ever come to be? Aliba de Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda hechi mishkachas la. According to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, that there is no hasra, and therefore the Edom can always say we came simply to prohibit her on her husband. How is it that she could ever be killed? The Gemara answers, Kishezinsa v'chozra v'zinsa. In a case where we have witnesses testifying concerning a second act of immorality. At the point of the first act of immorality, she already became prohibited from her husband. Therefore, the witnesses that come to testify about the second commission of immorality cannot say we were coming to forbid her from her husband. She was already forbidden from her husband. The Gemara asks, but still they have an out. They could have said, we came to forbid her from ever marrying the second paramour, the second gentleman that came along to conduct this act of immorality with her. So the Gemara says, no, the case of the Isha Chaveira, according to Rabbi Yossi Buda, being killed would be in the following. Shezinsa miboyel rishon. She conducted the second act of immorality with the original paramour. In other words, the original fellow that created the prohibition from being with her husband and with himself as well comes and conducts a second act of immorality, and when witnesses come to testify about that, what was their intent if not to see to it that she would be put to death? And therefore, when they're exposed as liars, they will be put to death. Inami, another scenario may be Shizinsa Mikroveha, where the Bioshnia, the second act of immorality, was done with relatives that are forbidden to her anyway. As a result of that, we cannot say, like was proposed in the question, that we can't say that the witnesses could claim that they were coming to forbid her with the paramour when the paramour is himself an already forbidden relative. The Gemara asks, "Maishno nara murasa denokat afilu nesuanami." Why did Rav Chanan, in presenting his case or his halacha, choose the example of nara hamurasa? He could have spoken about an already fully married woman, and in such a case, witnesses who came along to testify about the act of immorality conducted with her, they could say they were coming to forbid her from continuing to be with her husband. The distinction between Na'am Rasa is a case, and Nesua is, in the case of Erisin, the woman was given money as an act of marriage. However, they didn't reach the Nesuin level yet, which is characterized by Chuppah and the like, which is a point that is characteristic of a Nesua, that after the Erisin, they then enter the Chuppah, and that creates Nesuin, and that's a point at which you have a couple that live together as man and wife. The question then was that why did Rav Chanan choose the case of Na'a HaMurasa when he could have presented the same issue involving an Isha Nesua, a fully married woman? The Gemara says, that is true, in such a case the witnesses could have claimed the same thing, that we were not coming to see to it that the woman is put to death, we were coming simply to forbid her on her husband. Ella, the chidush, the novel value of the case Rav Chanan presented was as follows. Afilu hai delo yasva to say, even in the case of the Na'am Rasa, where she wasn't living with her husband at all yet. And one might have thought that since the girl, or the woman, was not with her husband yet, it wasn't on their minds to forbid her from a man that she wasn't even with to begin with. Afilu hai delo yasva to say, even this one that she wasn't yasva to say, is living with him, yecholim loimar, they could still say that was their intent, lo oisra al bai lo bonu, that this was our intent, to forbid her from being with her husband to be, so to speak. Husband to be, we simply mean in the sense that a man that she has not been living with yet altogether. Once again, you see a slash mark indicating that the following Gemara is a new thought. We glance at the side of the Gemara, Nosei Mivne, Dinoi Shel Rav Chista, the halacha, the law of Rav Chista, Hakosha Bevdikois, where you have a discrepancy, a conflict between the witnesses during the Bedikos type questions, the Kalov Shurim, Tseva Begodov. If there's a discrepancy regarding color of clothing, Eino hakosha, this does not constitute a contradiction. V'edus kayemes, and the testimony will stand. In other words, contradiction in information that the witnesses provide concerning non-essential information, information that's not directly related to the central part of the case, if it's a case of murder. So the color of the clothing of the murderer is not essential, whereas the type of murder weapon would be considered essential. So according to Rav Chisda, when you have a contradiction in Bedikos concerning color of clothing, that's not considered a contradiction. In the upcoming Gemara, though, we will see a series of diamonds as well. Those represent hatkafot al Rav Chisda, attacks on Rav Chisda, questions that will be raised against his approach. We now turn to the Gemara. Omer of Chisda, Echod Omer b'sayaf harago, v'echod Omer b'ariron harago. One witness says that the murder was done with a sword, and the other witness says that the murder was done with a weapon called ariron. Ein ze nachoin. The unit of testimony is not accurate, and it's therefore botel, therefore void. However, Echod Omer kelov shchurin, v'echod Omer kelov levonim. One said his clothing were black, and the other one says his clothing were white. Hare ze nachoin. This is considered sufficiently accurate, and in other words, though there's a contradiction on the issue of color of clothing, as long as the rest of the information is in place, it's an acceptable unit of testimony. The Gemara asks, Meisvei, nachon, a quote from the Pasuk, Shiehe nachon, that we're interested in accuracy. Echod Omer b'sayef harago v'echod Omer b'ariron harago. Or another case, Echod Omer kelov shchorin v'echod Omer kelov levonim. Ein ze nachon. Notice what we've done with our markings. We've dashed, underlined the word kelov and ein ze nachon. So we see from here that a discrepancy concerning clothing is not acceptable. Ein ze nachon. It's not an acceptable unit of witness of testimony. Hence a question on Rav Chisda. Answer, Tirgumah Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda explains this source that said regarding Kalov and the result being Ein Zenachon, Besudar, we're talking about a piece of cloth, Shechonkoi Boi, that it itself was the murder weapon, the Hainu Sayef Variron. And as such, it's central information, just like the nature of the murder weapon itself, and hence Ein Zenachon. However, if it's an issue of color of clothing of the parties concerned, that, Rav Chisda says, if there's a discrepancy, would not affect the validity of the testimony. Toshma, Echad Omer Sandalov Shchurin, V'Echad Omer Sandalov Levonim. Sandalov being an article of clothing, shoes, sandals. Ein Zenachon. If there's a discrepancy, the source says, we will reject the testimony. Well, that's a question on Rav Chisda. The Gemara answers, Hosom nami kigon shiburat boi v'sandalo v'harago. The issue of the sandal, of the shoe, in this particular case, was that the shoe itself was the murder weapon. And Rav Chisda concedes that that is central information, and hence, if there's a contradiction, the unit of testimony is rejected. Toshma, well, another source, Maisa Ubarak ben Zakai Buktaitainim. We see that ben Zakai subjected the witnesses to questions concerning Ukse Teino, stems of figs, and the understanding is that if there is a discrepancy in that, the unit of witnesses will be rejected. And how do you explain that as being a reason for rejecting them? And if you say that it's they're rejected, that's a kasha on Rav Chisda, because this the issue of the color of the ukse teino is not central to the sin itself. At this point in the Gemara, we encounter a new geometric form, the bow tie form. We'll notice on the outside margin, the mivneh, we see a bow tie featured. Chuvos lahat kofois al Rav Chisda mi ben Zakkai. We will see answers here to the question posed to Rav Chisda from the ben Zakkai source. Number one, we will see Romi Bar Chama. He's featured with a double underline in the Gemara because there are two versions of what he says. And then we'll see Rav Yosef's approach a bit later. We continue. Omar Romi Bar Chama. Kagoin Sha'okatz Te'eno B'Shabbos De'ah Ko Miktil. The case that Ben Zakkai was dealing with was not a murder case. It was a case of someone performing a Shabbos violation. And as such, what was the violation? He cut off a tree, a fig. He cut off the fig from the tree. Therefore, the fig is a central piece of information because it's through the fig that he is going to suffer the death penalty. Question: Vahotanya Omru Lo Tachas Teina Horago. In the context of the Ben Zakkai source, it turns out that it to be a murder case, not a Shabbos violation case. Elo Amar Rami Bar Chama. Hence, Rami Bar Chama comes up with a new response: Kegoin Sheshoftoi BeYichur Shel Teina. The case involving Ben Zakkai was a murder case where the sharp end of a fig branch was used to kill the victim, and hence there is no kasha on Rav Chisda because the fig stem was the murder weapon, and hence a central part of the testimony. Toshma Omar Lohen Te'eno zu ukzeho dakin, ukzeho gasin, te'enim shchurus, te'enim levanos. Continuing with the example of Ben Zakkai and the figs, we find that the information that the witnesses tell us concerns not only the fig stems, which may or may not be a murder weapon, but it also contains information concerning the colors of the figs themselves. And it's quite obvious that figs themselves are not capable of killing somebody. And even so, Ben Zakkai was interested in asking the witnesses about the color of the figs. This would be a kasha on Rav Chisda because color of figs is not central to the murder itself. And yet, Ben Zakkai says that a contradiction concerning this kind of matter would be reason for voiding the testimony. That's a question on Rav Chisda, who said we can accept the testimony all the same. Elo Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef comes to the defense of Rav Chisda and says, Mi Ben Zakkai loisiv inish. Are you asking a kasha from Ben Zakkai on Rav Chisda? Shiny Ben Zakkai. Ben Zakkai represents a unique Tanaic opinion, de bedikos kechakirois mashvi lei. Ben Zakkai views bedikos questions with the same level of severity, of centrality, as chakiros questions. Rashi says on the second line under the Gemara, kechakirois mashvi lei, livdoik bechol asher yuchal kedei lahakish. Ask whatever you can in order to trip them up. Just like in the Chakiros questions, we find that they can be tripped up, they can be shown or exposed to be liars regarding a non-central type issue. For example, Ze Omer B'Mokom Ploni, the witnesses are not in agreement with the place that the event took place. Dahainu Dovo Acher, the issue of location is not central to the act itself. The hamokom lo hargo, the place didn't kill the person, and yet we know that in a discrepancy concerning place, the testimony will be voided. Hachinami bedikos, so too regarding other questions, even if they're not central to the murder itself. In other words, they're not issues directly relating to the murder, to the way the act of murder was carried out. Nevertheless, just like we see by mokum, by place, we will reject the testimony in the event of discrepancy, so too in Bedikos' questions in general. At this point in the Gemara, a new thought pattern, though connected in the sense that up till now we cited Ben Zakkai, here the Gemara will be interested in finding more information about who this gentleman was. Man Ben Zakkai. Ilemo Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, if you were to think that it's the famous Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, the Gemara feels that that cannot be. And at this point, the Gemara will present a long question to reject the Ilemo. You'll notice in the markings, we've squiggled on line the Ilemo and called it 1. This is stage 1 of the analysis. 3 lines from the bottom, you'll notice Elo Ben Zakkai. You see a squiggle underline number 2, which represents a second stage in this analysis. At the very bottom line, the beginning of line, you'll see a third stage. It's clear to us that Ben Zakkai was involved with questions presented to witnesses concerning a murder case. Murder cases were judged by the Sanhedrin as long as the Sanhedrin were located in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Lishkas HaGozis, as long as the main Sanhedrin, the top Sanhedrin was there, murder cases could be prosecuted wherever. However, if the main Sanhedrin left the Beis HaMikdash, if they were no longer there, they were exiled, there could not be prosecution of murder cases. So we're working with this given that Ben Zakkai lived at a time that the Sanhedrin was in session while located in the Beis HaMikdash, the Lishkas HaGozis, which was their place. Therefore, if you suggest that Ben Zakkai is a reference to the famous Tana, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, we now will encounter a problem, and that's represented by the long question marking. You see that by the encircled kuf to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Mi have b'Sanhedrin? Could Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai have been on the Sanhedrin? And we're going to say no. V'ha Tanya, we have the following Tanaic source, which describes the background of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. He says, Kol Shnois of Shor Ben Zakkai, Me'a Ve'ashrim Shana. He lived till 120. Arboim Shana, his first 40 years of life, Osak B'Prakmatya, he was involved with business. Mem Shana, the next 40 years, from age 40 till age 80, Lomad, he studied Torah. Arboim Shana, Limei, his last 40 years of life, from age 80 till age 120, he was in the position to teach Torah and to offer halachic rulings. V'tanya, arboim shana koidem churban abayis, 40 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, golsa Sanhedrin v'yoshvala b'chanus. The Sanhedrin was exiled and was sent to a place called Chanus. Rashi points out it's a place in Yerushalayim, but for our purposes, it's not in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not the Sanhedrin was no longer for 40 years. At the prior to the destruction of the temple, the Sanhedrin was not located in the Lishkas HaGozis. The Omar Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Avudimi Lomar, skipping the bracketed section for a moment, this teaches us Shelo Donu Dinei Nefashos, that they, the Sanhedrin, no longer judged cases of murder. Let's go over the skipped section. We have a note on the inside margin. So, Grayim L'Shem Dilug, Mashin Nimso B'Soichon Boi Tikun. What we're about to see now is something that is inaccurate, and the Gemara fixes it as we saw. Rav Yisrael Bar Avudimi tells us the information concerning the Sanhedrin as having been exiled during the last 40 years of the temple's existence teaches me shelo donu dine knosos, that they no longer judge cases that are classified as knas. Those are financial matters that the penalty of which does not correspond directly to the act that was committed. The example of theft comes to mind, where Geneva pays not just the value of the stolen item, but pays double. The kefel payment is known as a knas. So the Gemara asks here, dine knasos al kadaitach, is that what's affected by the fact that the Sanhedrin went into exile? What does one thing have to do with the other? Rashi points out, v'chilishkas hagozes geiremes ledine knasos. Is it so that the presence in the lishkas hagozes is what causes or enables dine knasos to be judged? That's not true. Elo shelodonu dine nefashos. The importance of knowing that the Sanhedrin was exiled is of bearing to cases of murder. Or not only that, but all capital cases. Capital cases are not judged by Sanhedrin when they are not fixed in the lishkas hagozes. Utnan, further information that's necessary to know. Mishechorav beis hamikdash hiskin Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. At the point the temple was destroyed, we see Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai functioning as a legal authority. Hiskin means he established takonis. So if that be the case, that he was alive and functioning as a legal authority at the point of the temple destruction, and we know that he was able to function as an authority for a maximum of 40 years, so if you take that point of time, we know that at the destruction of the temple, he was functioning as an authority. He could have functioned in that capacity for a maximum of 40 years. So if you roll the clock back 40 years, you will see that you're in a time during which there were no capital cases prosecuted. And if that be the case, then Ben Zakkai, in the Tanaic source we saw above, who was prosecuting capital cases, was participant in those cases, could not be Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Gemara therefore answers, Elo ben Zakkai di Alma, another man that's called ben Zakkai, Hachi Nami Mistabra. In fact, this approach is most logical. The E Sakadaitach Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, if the ben Zakkai was a reference to the Tana Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, Kari Le Rebbe Ben Zakkai, would you refer to the outstanding rabbinic figure who is known as a Rav? Would you call him simply Ben Zakkai? The Gemara asks, V'hotanya, but we have a Tanaic source that says, Maisa Ubarak Rabbon Yochanan Ben Zakkai Vukse Teinim. We see that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai himself was involved with raising questions of the witnesses concerning the fig stems. The Gemara answers with a new resolution. Elo Talmid Hayoshev Lifnei Raboi Havei. During the period of time, let's say the last 80 years of the Beis Hamikdash. During those last 80 years, the first 40 of those years was a period of time that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai himself, though not a legal authority, he was a student learning Torah in the presence of his Rabbonim. And let's emphasize that during that period of time, capital cases were still being prosecuted. Let's read that again. Talmud Hayoshev Lifnei Rabo Havei. He was a student. The Omar Milsa, he would say things. Umistaber Luhu Taimei. Things that were of logical value. v'kavua b'shmei, and they would be established in his name. In other words, rulings or suggesting, let's say more accurately, suggestions offered by student Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai would be recorded and stated in his name. Ki hava lomad, when he was during the years of study as a student, ben Zakkai havi kori lei, he was referred to by that, ki talmid ha-yoshev lifnei rabo, as a student in the presence of his teacher. Ki hava limeid, when he reached age 80 and beyond, when he was in an authoritative position, when he was a teacher of Torah, havi kori le rabbon Yochanan ben Zakkai, they would then be referred to by that term. Ki kori le ben Zakkai, when you see the term ben Zakkai or the name appear as that, al shem de meikora, that's a reference to what he was at the outset, in his beginning stages. V'chi kori le rabbon Yochanan ben Zakkai al shem dehashto, that is a reference to him as he is called now. Let us see the Rashi at the top. V'kavua b'shmei v'hai de kori le b'chado masnisin ben Zakkai u'b'chado rabbon Yochanan ben Zakkai, that which in one Tanaic source dealing with the Uktzei Te'enim he's called Ben Zakkai, and in the other source he's referred to as Rabbon Yochanan ben Zakkai. Lo tikshi, that does not have to bother or pose a problem. Man dekorile Ben Zakkai, that source that calls him as such, al shem hahi shaita de omra loha milsa, That's in reference to the time that he said what he said as a student. Man dekorile Rabbon, the source that uses the title Rabbon as well, al shem sofei korile, that's a reference to not the time he suggested to be bodek buksek teinim, but using a title that he would be called later on, even though when he actually achieved that title there were no longer capital cases being judged. The Gemara continues, Ma bein chakiros v'chule, and we've written in more of the Mishnah, Vafilu shnayim oimrim ein onu yoidim, eduson miskayemes. The Gemara asks, Mai afilu shnayim oimrim? What is the meaning of the Mishnah when it says, even if two say they don't know regarding the Bedikos, the testimony stands. Pshita ki omar echad eini yodea edusan kayemes. If it be that if one of the two witnesses says, I don't know, and we see that that does not affect the validity of the testimony, ki amri beitre nami edusan kayemes. So even if two say, if both witnesses say they don't know, still the testimony will stand. In other words, once one says he doesn't know and we see it's still kosher, even if two say they don't know, the testimony will still be kosher. So of what significance is this afilu word that's added to the Mishnah? What is the Mishnah trying to convey? Let us glance at the outside margin. We'll notice a topic heading with a structural note. As we scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice diamonds and triangles appearing. Let us find out what their role is. So the diamonds represent shnei deos, two opinions, ech lefarish ha-mishnah, afilu shnayim oimrim ein onu yodim, two attempts to explain that phrase. Then we will see triangles, two of them, but assuming opposite directions as we go on. They're maskonos hafuchos. They are conclusions that are of an opposite nature to each other. Hence, we will feature that with the triangles also in opposite directions. Omer Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says, as far as the expression of the Mishnah of Afilu Shnayim Omrimein on the Yodim, Aresha Koi V'Hochi Komar. It's a phrase that's a reflection on the earlier part of the mission, and this is the understanding. In our marking system, we treat restatements of Mishnayos or clarifications of Mishnayos, even though it's not the actual Mishnah, but we treat it as if it were a Tanaic source by putting it in a frame as well. So Rav Sheshe says, this is the intent of the Mishnah. Bechakiros, in a case of Chakiros, which were central questions of the time and place questions, given a case of a group of three witnesses, Afilu Shnayim Oimrim Yodanu, Ve'echod Omer Eini Yodea, Edusan Betela. What we're seeing here is sort of a splicing of expressions. You see the expression Afilu Shnayim, and we saw that in the later part of the Mishnah, the part that was quoted in the Dibur HaMaschil a few lines up. And we're saying that that is a reference to the Chakiros, even though it appears in the Mishnah a bit later, it appears in the Bedikah section. But since that part of the Mishnah doesn't shed any light on the issue of Bedikos, we say that it's referring to something mentioned earlier, and as we just read. So what has been described just now? If you have a unit of testimony comprised of three witnesses, two of which is your basic unit of testimony, two witnesses constitute a solid unit of testimony, and two of them say they know the Chakiros, they can answer those questions, and one of these three witnesses says, I don't know, the Edus is batel. The testimony is voided. Now you'll ask, why is that, or based on whom is that? Keman, like whom is that? The answer is Rabbi Akiva. This follows Rabbi Akiva's philosophy or approach to units of testimony, Demakish Shloisha Lishnayim, that compares three to two. In other words, just like two constitute a unit of testimony, and if there's a problem within the two, the testimony is voided, so too three. Once they form a single unit of testimony, they're all coming to testify together, we don't say, look at them as 2 plus 1, and if there's a problem with a third witness, let's just discount him and allow the testimony to stand with the basic two. No, we don't say that. And that's a function of Rabbi Akiva's approach that compares 3 to 2, that they become one unit of testimony, and each participant becomes a central figure in the testimony. Omar Rava objects to Rav Sheshes' approach and says, "Vaha edusan kayemes katani." The section of the Mishnah that we are trying to understand says that the testimony will stand. This you can see by just glancing back a few lines into the section that was written in between the lines. Simply the quote from the Mishnah where it said, "Even if two say we don't know, edusan miskayemes." The explanation Rav Sheshes offers comes out with a case of Edusan Betela, as you can see from the dashed underline two lines up. Elo Omar Rava, Hochi Komar. This is how to understand the Mishnah. Afilu Bechakirois, even in cases of Chakira questioning, Shnayim Oimrim Yodanu, Ve'echod Omer Eini Yodea, Edusan Kayemes. Even if two say, we know, and one says he doesn't know, and the chidush is, even though you're in the realm of chakiros, which are of central importance to the questioning, the testimony will stand. Keman, based on whom is this, that you can have a situation of one of the witnesses saying, I don't know, and the testimony stands, even though we're dealing with chakiros, Delo Rabbi Akiva. This follows an opinion not like that of Rabbi Akiva, which means we don't compare the three to two. And hence, if you've got three, we can say, once I have two that answer the necessary criteria, the third one can be discounted. The Gemara will follow with a story, and let us take a look at the topic heading in the outside margin, the Nosei. Me'achar dechakirois ubedikos min haTorah. Once we show, once we know that these two types of questionings, time and place questions, which are chakiros, the other information questions called bedikos, and they're both based on the Torah. We saw that chakiros were learned from vedarashta v'chakarta, etc. And we saw v'hinei emes nochon was the source for the need for accuracy in bedikos questions. Loma yesh hevdel b'neihem bizman she'echad omer eini yodea. Why is there a difference as far as the Mishnah is concerned when there's a difference between those two types of questions when one of the witnesses says, I don't know. Namely, in the case of Chakiros, if you have two witnesses and one says, I don't know, we void the unit, we void the testimony. In the case of Bedikos, if one of the witnesses says, I do not know, we don't void the testimony. As we said, the Gemara opens up with a story. Rav Kana, Rav Safra, Tanu, Sanhedrin, Bei, Rabbah. They were learning Masechet Sanhedrin in the yeshiva of Rabbah. Poga Bahu Rami Bar Chama. And one day, Rami Bar Chama meets up with them. Omar Lahu, Mai Amrisu Ba, B'Sanhedrin Debe Rabbah. What chidush do you have in Masechet Sanhedrin that you're learning by Rabbah? In other words, Rashi points out, if you're learning by this great man, Rabbah, you must have a lot of novel insights. Amri Lay, they said back, Rav Kana Rav Safra said back to Rami Bar Chama, Umay Amrinon Ba B'Sanhedrin Greidasa Umay Kashiloch. Rashi says, Mai Amrinon B'Sanhedrin Greidasa Mai Yesh Lonu Lomar Ilu Lohayinu Lemeidem Mipi Chocham Kolkach. What would there be to be said, even if we weren't learning by a great man? Hecho Yesh Lahakshos Ba. Where is there room to ask questions? Umay Kashiloch. What is your question? Their feeling seems to be that if Rami Bar Chama is confronting them or raising the issue of their learning Sanhedrin, it must be something is bothering him. So they want to focus on what is your question. At this point, we actually feature a long question marking, as you can see in the space to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, between the Gemara and the Tosfos, the length of Rami Bar Chama's question. Omar Lehu, Mehadikotani, my difficulty is from the following source, our Mishnah, that says, Ma bein chakiros abedikos. What's the difference between these two? Chakiros, echad omer eini yodea, edusan betela. Bedikos, omar echad eini yodea, v'afivu shnayim omrim ein onu yodim, edusan kayemes. So we featured with our markings the emphasis on chakiros and bedikos, and now compare. In one case, it's betela, in the other case, it's kayemes, it stands. Michti, let's look into this. Edi v'edi, both cases of both types of questions, the chakiros and the bedikos, equals doraisahi. They're both of a Torah origin. Mai shno chakiros umai shno bedikos, why are they treated differently? Now we have an answer. Amri lay, they answered him, Hachi hashto. How can you compare them in the first place? In other words, it's true they're both from the Torah, but there's a fundamental difference between them. B'chakiros, in questions regarding time and place, Omar echod, if one of them says, Eini yodea, you know what happens? It becomes edusan betela, dehavyalo, edus shi'i ato yochol azima. Their testimony is void because it's now categorized as testimony that cannot be subject to hazama. What is the nature of hazama? Hazama is where you have two subsequent witnesses coming and saying, you were with us at that time in a different place. So there has to be a statement of time made by the first witnesses and a statement of place made by the first witnesses in order for a second set of witnesses to come and counter them on those two points. Therefore, if the first set of witnesses say Eini Yodea, there's no possibility of setting up the Hazoma process, and testimony that doesn't allow the Hazoma process from setting in is considered non-testimony. However, Bedikos, Omar Echod Mehem Eini Yodea, Eidusan Kayemes. In the case of Bedikos questions, which are not time nor place, the testimony stands. And why is that? Edus shato yochol hazimahu, because it still is a case that of testimony which could be subject to being undone through hazama, and as a result of that, it's considered legitimate testimony. Omar lehu, Rami bar Chama, upon hearing their analysis and the distinction that they just stated, he says to them, Ihachi amri suba, if thusly you say, tuva amri suba, then you're saying a lot. In other words, he was expressing his how impressed he was with their response. Amri le, they said back to Rami bar Chama, mi tivuse demor amrinon ba tuva. It's from your good nature and your humility that you're willing to thank us and concede to us that we said something of significance. However, if you wanted to be tough on us, mi nizihuse demar lo amrinon ba valo chada. Nizihuse deals with firm speech. In other words, as we said, if you wanted to be firm and with us and ask upon us, we wouldn't be able to answer any of your objections. Echor Omer v'chulei. At this point in the Gemara, we will be dealing with the section of the Mishnah dealing with the time of month, the date of the events that took place. The Mivne, the structure note on the outside margin, indicates the role of the double underlining that we will see here. We've noted Sidra Shel Memros Shel Rav Acha Bar Chanina Amar Rav Asi, a list of a series of comments that he makes, and this series you'll notice continue down not only the rest of this Amud but down Mem Beis Amud Aleph as well. The Nose, the topic here, Ad Kama B'Chodesh, up to what point in a month, Adam Yocho Litois Be'ibor HaChodesh, do we say that a person will could possibly error, make a mistake with regard to the issue of the extension of the previous month? In our Mishnah, we saw that if one witness says that the event took place on the second of the month, and the second witness says it took place on the third of the month, we don't say that one is lying or that this is a contradictory unit of testimony. We say they were talking about the same day, the same event on the same day. How is it that there's a reported discrepancy? And that is, as we explained in the Mishnah, that one is aware of the extension of the previous month, and hence, if the previous month was extended by a day, the new month, the counting of the new month started a day later. If, however, one is not aware of the extension of the previous month, his date calculation starts a day earlier. Hence, he'll get to a later point in time, later than the one who was aware of the extension of the previous month. Ad kama. The question now is, how far into the month do we say that a person may still be unaware of the Ibor HaChodesh, of the extension of the previous month? Omer of Acho Bar Chanino, Omer of Asi, Omer of Yochanan, Ad Ruboi Shel Chodesh. Until you reach the majority of the month, in other words, once you pass the halfway mark of the month, a person by that time will become aware that of the previous month having been extended. Omar Rova, Af Ana Nami Tnina, we have a Tanaic source that supports this. Echad Omer B'Shalosh, Ve'echad Omer B'Chamesh, Edusan B'Tela. If one witness says that the event took place on the third of the month, and another witness says it took place on the fifth of the month, we say that the unit of testimony is voided. V'Amai, why do you avoid it? Neimo shezeh yodea b'shnei iburin v'zeh eino yodea b'shnei iburin. Why not say that one was aware of 2 months being extended, and hence he would have been the one to say that the event took place on the third of this given month? V'zeh Eino Yodea B'Shnei Iburin, and the other witness that said it took place on the fifth of the month was unaware of extensions, and hence the counting of the new months started earlier, hence he got to a later date. We don't say that. Elolav Mishum de Berubo Yoda. So we conclude that a person would not ever come upon a situation of not being aware of two previous months' extension, because at the majority point of any given month, he becomes aware of what happened on the previous month. Rashi, the lower part of the page, Ad Rubo Shochodesh, Avol Mikan Ve'elich, beyond the majority point of the month, Kagon Echod Omer Be'esrim Ve'echod, let's say that again, Echod Omer Be'esrim. One says it took place the 20th of the month, Ve'echod Omer Be'esrim Ve'echod, and the other one said it took place the 21st of the month, Lo Talinon Be'ibor HaChodesh. We're not going to ascribe the discrepancy due to lack of awareness of extension of previous month. The Kfar Shama Biyomim Halalu Shahoya Chodesh Mubar. He has already become aware of the fact that the previous month was extended, so he could not possibly say that the event took place on the 21st. So we have seen in the Gemara, by the fact that we don't accept a unit of witnesses where one says third and one says fifth, and try to explain that as one being aware of two Iburin and the other one not, it must be because at a certain point in the month, namely at the majority point in the month, everyone becomes aware of the extension of the previous month. The Gemara rejects this, though. The Olam Emaloch, I might tell you, Barubo Nami Lo Yoda, that even when you pass the majority point of the month, a person is not aware, doesn't become aware of what happened with the previous month. So the question is, why is it that if there's a two-day discrepancy, do we say we throw them out? Uba Shipura Yoda. Shipura is the shofar blowing. The shofar blowing was done when a new month was ushered in. Rashi points out, when a new month was ushered in, whether it be a mole or a chaser, whether it be at the point that the previous month was a 30-day month, or the previous month a 29-day month, when the new day comes in, a shofar was sounded. And when you have a discrepancy of one day, so we say one was aware, one heard the shofar, and the other one did not hear the shofar. The one who didn't hear the shofar thought that the Rosh Chodesh would be a day later. Let's see this now in the Gemara. The Olam Emaloch, we're reading this line again. The Olam Emaloch, Beruba Nami Lo Yoda, Ube Shipuro Yoda, Bechad Shipuro Amrino Detoi. With one shofar blowing, we say that there's a possibility that a person might not have been aware of one shofar blowing, and that would throw off their testimony by one day. However, Betray Shipuro Lo Amrino Detoi. But to suggest that a person missed out on two shofar blowings, in other words, 2 months went by and he was not aware of the shofar blowing, which would have accounted for a discrepancy of 2 days. Nevertheless, we say people don't err in that. The Omer of Acha Bar Chanina, Omer of Asiyam Rabbi Yochanan, we'll notice now a new topic, as featured in the outside margin, Ad Kama B'Chodesh Nitan Lomar Kiddush Levona. Up till what point in the month is one entitled to recite the Kiddush Levona Brocha? The text of that is featured on Daf Mem Beis Amud Aleph. But our topic right now is, up till what point in the month do we what the Gemara calls Mevorchin Al HaChodesh. The part of the text of the Brocha is Mechadesh Chodoshim, the one who renews months. The concept of renewal is going to be the central point of these two of these opinions. So the Gemara asks, Ad kama mevorchim ala chodesh? Up to what point do we recite that bracha of Kiddush HaChodesh? Answer, Ad shetamale pigimah. So this is Rabbi Yochanan's response. Rabbi Yochanan says, until it's lacking, the pigimah would be its notch or its lacking is filled. Ve'kama, what does that mean? Omer of Yankiv Bar Idi, Omer of Yehuda, Ad Shiva, until the seventh of the month. Until the seventh of the month, whereas the days before that, the moon is in its new phase, or its crescent phase. At the seventh of the month, the hollowed out section, if you will, is filled, so that you have a half moon. Nahardoi Amri, Ad Shisha Asar, until the 16th of the month. In other words, as long as the moon is in its rising fashion, or in its enlarging state, which takes you till the 15th of the month, when you have a full moon. So up till that point, you are entitled to say Mechadesh Chodoshim. There's a sense of renewal. The Gemara at the top of Mem Beis Amud Aleph says both of these opinions accept Rabbi Yochanan's ruling that said Ad Shetismale, until it gets filled up. The question is, what is referred to by the Pegimasa that Rabbi Yochanan mentioned? Chad. So the Gemara goes on to say here, Ha Lemeheve Ki Asra. One, the opinion that said until the seventh, said that the filling of the pegima was to make the moon look like in a bow and arrow. You have the bow that has a string drawn across it, from which the arrow is eventually shot forth. That's the yasra. The imagery, though, creates one of a half circle. So up till that point, one can say Mechadesh Chodoshim. Ha Lemeve Ki Nafya. The other opinion that says up till the 16th is referring to the renewal of the moon till the point it becomes like a Nafya, like a sifter, which is a device which is round in shape. Let us glance at the Rashi at the top. With Ravayik Rabbi Yochanan, the Milsid Rabbi Yochanan Pligi. They're both arguing within Rabbi Yochanan. The Ash Nismali Svirula, they both hold with that concept of until it gets filled. Miu Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Miui Pigi Masa, the Gomer Rabbi Yochanan, the filling of the notch, Rabbi Yochanan said, the Meve Ki Yasra, to become like the bow. The Havoi Kemo Yeser Shal Keshes, Shate Kol Pigimas HaKeshes Malaya Ad HaYeser, so that the entire notch or carved out section of the bow is filled up until the string. Dahainu chatsi hoigil. That's a half circle. Vahai l'sof shivahu. That happens by the end of the seventh day. Unardoi savri milui pegima. The Kama Rabbi Yochanan, the filling up of the notch of the lacking that Rabbi Yochanan was referring to. Ad heve kinafio agula b'milu asa. Until it becomes a complete circle. With that, we complete our shiur for today.